Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be, and however you may be listening or watching, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. I already called my wife. Honey, Sam Darnold's on television tonight. We're eating in. Let's make some pasta, have a glass of wine. Very excited for the soon-to-be 3-0 Carolina Panthers. 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell, 15 minutes. You play fantasy football, you bet on football, or just want to get smarter, Greg Cosell,
one hour
from now, Joy Taylor. Already made my call. I'm already ready to go.
I actually have a good restaurant recommendation for you.
Can we not say it publicly?
Not saying it on air. Nope. It's too small.
I went to my dentist 2 days ago. Not talking about
your
it.
Your dentist is a really nice... I don't know him. Or where it is, but when you were describing where it is,
I already know
it's an amazing dentist.
I'm not telling anybody. I'll never get in again.
I'm going to tell you about this place, though, because I think you'll like it.
All right. Today is the 20th anniversary of Drew Bledsoe getting knocked silly, one of the hardest hits ever, and Tom Brady stepping up and being the quarterback. And Seth Wickersham's a very good writer. He has a big expose on it. Bledsoe was really one of the most serious injuries in league history. They had to rush him to a hospital, internal bleeding. And, you know, people, for the longest time, it was almost comical that Brady was a system quarterback and it was all about Belichick. And we've all come to realize Tom's pretty good. Yes, Tom Brady got a break. I think everybody in life gets lots of breaks. But many people aren't grateful and can't recognize them. I always think how lucky I was to have two smart parents. My dad was a doctor. His brother was a doctor. My mom in England was an honors student. I came out with a much greater chance to succeed than many other people in the world. I'm eternally grateful I had smart parents who made, you know, lots of smart decisions. I was around that wisdom my whole life. We didn't have a lot of sickness in my family. Mostly everybody's healthy. Everybody lives a long time. Feel very, very lucky for that. But it's interesting because with Brady, there has always been this sense that, boy, he got Belichick. And what a break he got. Tom Brady would have been really, really, really successful if he would have gone to any team, including the Cleveland Browns or Detroit, because he has the greatest traits I've ever seen. He's the most disciplined athlete I've ever seen. He's the most willful athlete I've ever seen. He was drafted in high school by a Major League Baseball team. He is big, he is strong, he is smart, and he is incredibly obsessed about this sport. But yes, he got a break, Bill Belichick, and the injury. Should be noted, Belichick was about done with Drew Bledsoe anyway, so Tom was going to get some reps. You know who also got breaks, though? Jared Goff, Matt Ryan, and Dak. Jared Goff got the smartest young coach in the football league, Sean McVay, a great offensive line, and Todd Gurley for a 2 or 3 year window may have been the best running back in the league. Oh, yeah, the defense was good too. Matt Ryan got good ownership, Julio Jones, and Kyle Shanahan for several years as a coordinator. And Dak Prescott got the best offensive line and the best running back for a few years, Zeke. All three playoff disappointments. Everybody gets breaks. It's what you do with them. By the way, here's who also got breaks. And I believe to be a legend in team sports, I'm not talking tennis where you don't have a salary cap, you control to a greater extent your success. I'm not talking skiing, tennis, golf. I'm talking in team sports. And in America, they overwhelmingly have salary caps. Everybody needs a break to be a legend. Tom Brady would have been a Pro Bowler. Tom Brady would have been a Pro Bowler. Tom Brady would have gone to the playoffs, and my gut feeling is he would have eventually won a Super Bowl. But he's a legend, a living, playing legend. Every legend got breaks. I'll give you an example. Michael Jordan got breaks. Phil Jackson? Maybe the smartest coach in league history. Great, rock-solid parents. A legendary, wisdom-filled college head coach. Scottie Pippen, not a bad number two. Michael Jordan got breaks. Phil Jackson talked Michael Jordan into shooting less and being a better teammate. What if he never had that wisdom, or the wisdom of his parents, or the wisdom of Dean Smith? Michael would have scored 47 points a game, and that'd be about it. Because he couldn't beat those Pistons for a long time until he got that wisdom. Tim Duncan, that's a legend, got a break. David Robinson broke his foot. The Spurs were actually a good team. After Robinson broke his foot, they tanked, and they got Duncan. They had won 59 games the year before. He got a great ownership group, Greg Popovich, David Robinson, ready to go. How about Patrick Mahomes? I don't know. He inherited Andy Reid, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. Excellent ownership, terrific general manager, and a flaky division. And how lucky was Patrick Mahomes to get Alex Smith for a year? I mean, the ultimate teammate. To be a legend, and I'm talking Jeter and Kobe and Michael and Brady. To be a legend, not an all-star, not even a Hall of Famer. John Elway was known as having a great arm and getting blown out in Super Bowls. That was John. I lived through it. That was his legend. He's getting blown out in Super Bowls. And then he got one of the three or four greatest offensive minds in the history of football, Mike Shanahan, and this kid named Terrell Davis, a running back. And you know what happened to John Elway then? He blew out people in Super Bowls. John Elway's a legend. Peyton Manning got Bill Polian, the GM, Hall of Famer, a legend. Brett Favre got Ron Wolf. Favre's a legend. Derek Jeter goes to the Royals or the Reds. He's an all-star, and he probably ends up being a Hall of Famer. You're not going to YouTube watching those Yankee highlights in Yankee Stadium. He's not playing the Red Sox in classic fall ALCS series, okay? So everybody gets breaks to be a legend, not to be an all-star. All-star is different. Sport, I'll give you an example. Right now in Major League Baseball, there's so few legends out there. I'm talking Kobe. I'm talking Michael. I'm talking LeBron. I'm talking Brady. How many legends currently in Major League Baseball do we have? None. Mike Trout's great. He's not a legend. Never won a playoff series. We got great players all through baseball. Name a current legend. I don't think the sport has one. I don't. Like, Clayton Kershaw is huge in Los Angeles. Justin Verlander. These are, we don't have a Reggie Jackson. We don't have a Babe Ruth. Now, Ohtani is better than Babe, but he's not a legend because we don't watch him in the fall, and that's when legends are made in baseball. In the NFL, legends are made in the winter, December and January and early February. So, yes, Tom Brady got breaks. We all do. Every legend ever in sports got something great. You know, it's you start looking around sports. Now, people that watch this show are sports fans. So you tend to think there's a lot more legends than there really are. The test I used to do was with my late mother, who was from England. If she had heard of you, you were a legend. She had heard of Michael Jordan. She wouldn't know who Russell Westbrook is. She would have heard of LeBron James. She had heard of Kobe. She had heard of Ken Griffey. We lived in the Pacific Northwest. She knew one athlete, Ken Griffey. Ken Griffey, the kid's a legend. So, yes, Tom Brady, 20th anniversary, got some breaks. All the great ones did. The truly great ones did. Great to have you in today. Sam Darnold party at my house tonight. It is not warm enough to wear a sweater or have soup. I do soup and sweater parties in the fall. It is blazingly hot right now in Southern California. but I'm all fired up for Sam Darnold. And there was a story out this morning that, you know, sometimes it looks like it's a harsh headline and it's criticism of Sam Darnold, but it actually should make Sam Darnold incredibly happy that he was not the first or second choice of Carolina. And I'll explain that coming up. Greg Cosell, 45 minutes from now.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Escape QuickBooks Quicksand with NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system. Go to netsuite.com/herd right now. Control and visibility over your financials, your e-commerce, and your inventory. Sam Darnold and the Panthers tonight play the Houston Texans, and they are about a touchdown favorite, a little bit more. There's a headline today, according to the Charlotte Observer, that Sam Darnold was not the first choice of the Carolina Panthers. They preferred Matt Stafford, and they preferred Deshaun Watson. And my takeaway is this is great news for Sam Darnold because he should not have been their first choice. Matt Stafford's got a better arm, and Deshaun Watson is more athletically gifted. Sam Darnold should have been the third choice and was. And that is a great thing for Sam Darnold. Because what ruins careers like his career with the Jets early is a front office that doesn't understand personnel. If you go to the last two drafts of the Carolina Panthers and their GM and Matt Rhule, very impressive. Several high-end starters. Carolina, and this is a good example that they know what they're doing. They currently have the second most cap space in the league, and they only have one unit, offensive line, that's in a rebuild. You'll see it tonight. It's their weakest unit. And that's why they can't be a great team. But their front seven, their defensive line, their wide receivers, their running backs are not only good, they're outstanding. Take the Chicago Bears. They're out of money and have four different units that need upgrading. Look at the New York Giants. They have no cap space. They're awful. In a lot of different places. Carolina is a great example. If you know personnel, Bill Parcells did turnaround jobs four times within a year, and Jimmy Johnson two times within a year. This league is not that hard if you know personnel. Parcells was brilliant. Jimmy Johnson, outstanding. Matt Rhule knows what he's doing. And by the way, if you go to Matt Rhule's college career, he's done it. This is the third time it's starting to look the exact same. So Matt Rhule goes to Temple. First year is a teardown. He's 2-10. Next year, he stabilizes it. They get to 500. And then we're off to bowl games. 10-4, 10-3. If you go to Matt Rhule in Baylor, the exact same thing. First year is a teardown. Take it to the studs. Second year, 500. We get to respectability. Third year, 11 wins, major bowl game, off and running. But what have they done in Carolina? Last year, the draft was all defensive players. They hit on three of them. Three of them appear to be outstanding. They tore it down to the studs, 5-11. Look at them this year. I predicted they'd be 8-9. Right now, they're 2-0. Should win tonight, go 3-0. But there are limitations. You can't be great with a bad O-line. And outside of right tackle, it's not a very good offensive line. You'll see tonight. Sam Darnold's got to run sometimes. But it's the exact... When people in life, men or women, move and keep doing the same thing in the same order, you got yourself a winner. And so this year, Matt Rhule, Atlanta and the Saints are in a rebuild. So it's a division you can win. 9-10 games this year. Not be great. They're not great. Can't be great with a bad O-line. They also play the very weak NFC East and the pretty average AFC East. So if Sam Darnold is the first choice, and that was the headline today, they don't know what they're doing. Matt Stafford should have been the first choice. Deshaun Watson should have been choice 1A. Sam should have been third. My concern is for Washington, who thinks Taylor Heineke's the answer, or Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's my bigger concern. If you're a quarterback and you're not the first choice, and you got Matt Stafford on the market and Deshaun Watson, thank the heavens. Your people know what they're doing. So that headline sounds brutal. It's the best thing Darnold's heard in a long time. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, Justin Fields will be making his first career start Sunday against the Browns, and the Bears rookie quarterback said he will be well prepared.
I think I'm ready. Of course, I've been preparing for this moment a long time, so my mindset hasn't changed. I'm still going to, play like football and just prepare the best I can, like I said before, and just, get a lot of practice reps in and just study, and, just get more comfortable and more confident with the plays.
It's not a great Browns defense. If you ask Browns fans, they're probably a little worried about the defense. It was really bad against Kansas City in the second half. It was really bad in the first half against Houston. So outside of Myles Garrett, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, the defense is a – we talked about this before the season, that the defense would be a work in progress.
Well, yeah, because they made a lot of offseason moves.
Seven new starters. So Cleveland's sort of what we thought. Run the ball. Defense going to take a while to figure it out. So as a first starting assignment, it's not a terrible place. The weather, by the way, you're not going to Cleveland in a hailstorm.
Right, in the winter.
You're going to get nice weather. You got a defense trying to figure itself out.
Although Justin Fields should get used to playing in the winter pretty quickly.
Also, his premier offensive players are all healthy. So I don't think he's going to win, but I think he'll play reasonably well. This is not a – it's they'll lose, but as far as a defense – It's not a brutal opening assignment.
Well, I just also feel like everyone needs to be a little patient with this situation. Now, Matt Nagy is the Dalton is the starter once he's healthy again. That's a week-to-week situation, obviously. But, we talked about this with Mark Sanchez this week. It's really just an impossible situation in Chicago. And and it's not undeserved. Like, Chicago fans deserve to be excited about their quarterback. And Andy Dalton is not exciting. We know what Andy Dalton is. And when you have Justin Fields there, whether he's quote-unquote ready or not, which I think is wildly overblown, No, he's not ready. None of these young quarterbacks are ready, but they have to play. Like, Trevor Lawrence has to play for Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson has to play. But they're also getting experience.
Yeah.
So there's only so much experience you can get from watching someone else do something. Reps are important as well. And I understand they don't have a great offensive line, which, look, well, most of these teams with these young quarterbacks don't have good offensive lines. That's why they're bad teams.
Yeah, I mean, we predicted before the season. I think you and I looked and we said week four or week three.
Yeah, I think it was week four or Lions.
Yeah, so we're week three and here we go. Yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens.
Oh, so am I.
The Browns are favored by 7, according to Fox.
And they should be. That's actually, I'm surprised that it should be. If Cleveland's defense was gelling in October, if they played, I think the line would be 9. But Cleveland doesn't have their defense right yet, so that feels that's a reasonable number. Cleveland is.
So you would take Cleveland?
That's not a game I'm going to bet this weekend. Mm-hmm. But if I was going to bet it, I would take Cleveland. But I think in October this would be a 9-point spread because I think Cleveland will get their defense together, but. Right, it just doesn't look right. Right now, it just doesn't look right, but yet they have 7 new starters. Like, slow down. Cleveland's defense was not going to be great in September.
So Carson Wentz injured both of his ankles in the Colts' loss to the Rams last Sunday, and he's not wearing a walking boot, but he has said he is still not quite right.
Still sore. Still sore, both of them, and working through it. Honestly, a lot of unknown. See how my body responds, and doing everything we can. Each couple hours, it's gotten better. So we'll kind of see how it continues to progress and listen to the doctors, listen to my body, and see where we're at.
Oh, he's listening to those doctors. That's nice. Well, his right ankle.
Sorry, lost myself there.
I'm a little picky choosy. His right ankle he injured when he was taken down from behind by Aaron Donald, which was the really rough video to watch. He's just kind of like...
And the one where he did a frisbee fling here?
Crumpled up, yes. It's worse than his left. Wentz played through the ankle sprain, which happened in the third quarter, and the MRIs showed that there's no structural damage. He didn't practice yesterday. So Jacob Eason and Brett Hundley are the backups if Carson Wentz cannot go against the Titans. That's according to Tom Pelissero. Hundley took the majority of the first team reps in Wednesday's practice.
By the way, so we've said this before. Carson Wentz and Sam Darnold are kind of, you know how Big Ben and Josh Allen are good comps, or Russell and Kyler Murray? They're good comps. I mean, they're both baseball guys, a little smaller. Carson Wentz, a good comp for him is Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz. Is that they're, I mean, if Carson Wentz was an inch taller and had to train, put on 12 pounds, he could be a tight end in the league. Darnold, the same thing. Darnold was a high school linebacker. They're both the same quarterback. I think Wentz has a better arm, but they're reckless. So when you watch Sam tonight, Matt Rhule is trying to coach the reckless out of Sam. Frank Reich is probably too, but when I watched Wentz in the first 2 weeks, he's not getting very good protection, and neither right now is getting good protection. I mean, Darnold's got to move more than he wants to, but when you watch Darnold tonight, there is a Wentz component where you're like, Sam, let the play win the game, not the play.
Well, I think that's, we talk about this all the time. Is that a personality thing?
I think it is.
Is it a youth thing? Is it an arrogance thing? Are you stubborn? Do you not believe that that's how you should play? Are you more concerned about your statistics than, you know, and you know, having highlight plays rather than just being efficient? But that's not how Wentz plays. The bigger question to me is Wentz going to be able to be healthy for the entire season? Because if he's not, they're in big trouble.
Oh, you can listen. Miami and Colts, the Dolphins and the Colts are great examples. Great GMs, you can do everything right. Don't get the quarterback right, chaos.
Well, even if you get the quarterback right, as far as the talent and the, you know, the ceiling and potential and all of that, if they're not available, it doesn't matter. It's the same conversation about Jimmy Garoppolo. We know Jimmy Garoppolo is a winner. We know that he's a good leader. We know that the organization likes him. But he's not on the field enough and consistent enough with his body, whether it is his fault or not, or any of these guys' fault. It's not Tua's fault he's not injured. I don't know what Carson Wentz's training is like, but he's injured a lot, too. Sometimes just guys are just injury-prone, and some guys never have any injuries, and there's no explanation for it at all. But if you're not available, there's nothing you can do about it. Yep. So yesterday we talked about Warriors owner Joe Lacob commenting on the possibility of trading for Ben Simmons. He said, we would always look. In some ways, it doesn't really fit what we're doing. He makes a lot of money, and can he finish games? I don't know. He's very talented. The problem is we have Draymond. Draymond and him are very similar in that sense, and neither one really shoots, and they do a lot of playmaking. That's one issue. The salary structure is another. And now, apparently, saying you don't want a player is tampering as well, since he was fined $50,000 yesterday for violating the league policy. He obviously wasn't expressing interest in Simmons, but he did technically discuss the availability of a player currently under contract with another team. So $50,000 out of his pocket. I don't know that he's incredibly concerned about that, but
could I argue?
Yes.
For a guy that's net worth is $1.2 billion, that it's worth the fine. If you say publicly, I don't think he really fits, and you ultimately make a deal, but you sound like you're very casual about it, and you save a draft pick instead of giving up a player and four draft picks. So in the end, it's certainly worth the $50,000 fine.
Sneaky, sneaky.
If I could save a draft pick, my indifference to Ben Simmons. He's okay. Because we all think that that's one of the really good landing spots.
Right.
So sometimes, like a great example, I've parked places knowing I'm going to get a parking ticket, but I don't want to search for a parking space for an hour and a half.
Right.
So you say like, okay, it's worth the $14 ticket if I pay it the first day. That is worth saying that. If it saves you a draft pick on a deal for Ben Simmons in 2 months.
Where are you getting $14 parking tickets in L.A.?
West Hartford. It was yours.
Oh, the minimum ticket here is like $60.
Yeah, I wanted it in the cold.
I agree. It's an interesting theory if it ends up playing out that way. It was certainly worth the money. $50,000 isn't anything to Joe Lacob, but you know, apparently you just cannot publicly discuss players at all if they're on another team.
Nothing.
We don't want them. We do want them. Just stay away from it.
Yep. Enjoy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback, joins us today. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So it is the 20-year anniversary of Tom Brady, the Drew Bledsoe injury. Now you're a young stallion, a young reporter. You look like you're 22 years old. So you weren't around.
I wish I was 22.
you weren't quite around then, but it is
right. It
is. I made the argument that Tom would have been successful because of his traits, his discipline, his willfulness, his size, his smarts. But to be a legend, a Kobe Bryant, you know, did get Phil Jackson and Shaq. He was drafted by Charlotte. To be a legend, they all needed breaks. Mahomes gets Andy Reid, Travis Kelce. Where have you, are you, I would say this, we all know Belichick helped. It looks like less than we thought. Like, where are you on the Brady got breaks? What do you think
Yeah.
Bledsoe doesn't get, I mean, where are you on that? Because for years and years, it was Belichick 60-40, and now it feels like Tommy 70-30.
You know what's interesting about it, Colin, is if you go back to the very beginning, right, if he goes to the wrong place, sixth-round picks don't get a lot of reps. So if he's a sixth-round pick for another team, and that coaching staff doesn't see in him as quickly what Bill Belichick saw in him, he might be gone. Like, he could be selling insurance somewhere now, for all we know, because of where he was drafted. You know, I mean, it's natural. If a guy goes in the first round, he's going to get a million chances. If a guy goes in the second or third round, he's at least going to get some rope. But guys who are taken on the last day of the draft, like, most of those guys, like, aren't going to get too many shots. So I think, you know, Brady's entry in the league has a lot to do with Belichick seeing something in him, sticking with him, keeping four quarterbacks that first year, and then elevating him to the backup spot in year two. And then I think, you know, the first three championships, a lot of it was Belichick, you know. But then look at the last three, okay? If you look at the last three and you look what lifted them up, they came back from two touchdowns down against maybe the best defense of the last decade. That's Seattle Seahawks defense, right? Then 2 years later, Kyle Shanahan, for a half, ran circles around the Patriots coaching staff. The Falcons go up 28-3. They won both those games, and they aren't winning both those games just based on coaching. And so, you know, I think you look at the first championship, a lot of that was smoke and mirrors. A lot of that was Belichick, right? A lot of that was kind of, you know, just, I mean, fairy dust, right? The next two championships were very well-rounded teams. And I think, you know, probably a little bit more Belichick and his team building than Brady. But the last three, I think the last three, you know, that Brady did a lot to carry those teams. And I'm not sure those teams were quite as talented as maybe the 2004 Patriots were, or the 07 team for that matter, that went undefeated. And so I think you have to look at different phases of the Patriots dynasty to sort of, you know, split up the credit. And so I think early on it was more Belichick, but as of late, and I think the last 10 to 15 years, it was probably more Brady.
You know, it's today I don't really have much of an Aaron Rodgers topic, which is fine because I'm kind of overwhelmed at this point. I'm just like over talking about it. But I do think it's interesting that he talked about silence being wisdom in the off season, and he's the guy that'll never stop talking. He just keeps talking about the press conference, the weekly hits. And are you surprised? I said this yesterday. I said it would be so beneath Brady or Russell Wilson, it feels like to me, to have this grievance session every week. And I do wonder, as he takes shots at people, I do wonder how it lands in the building. Mm-hmm. If it's become a very much a walking on eggshells, or you're going to be talked about every week. I don't remember a star quarterback having a weekly grievance session taking shots at announcers, yeah. Team. It's really unique in the last decade or two.
Yeah, and I think this sort of went in different phases, right? So in the spring, I do think they were walking on eggshells because they believe they've got a championship team there and that Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback to take them to the highest level. And so, you know, I think between people in the front office and the coaching staff, there was a, let's be really careful how we handle this. Let's not screw it up. If we can find a way to get him in, let's get him back in here. And, you know, I think it even got to the point where there were some people internally that were pissed off that the team president, Mark Murphy, said what he did in May. Then you get to the reentry into the building. And I think the way that Aaron handled that kind of angered some people in the building, where I think there were a lot of people there that were saying to themselves, well, wait a second, that's not exactly how that went down. And why is he getting up there and saying this happened like this when it really happened like that? And so, you know, I think for a few days there, it was a little tense in the building. And then football started, and the sense I got was things were largely back to normal, because I think everybody understands how much is on the line for everybody, whether it's the GM, Brian Gutekunst, the head coach, Matt LaFleur, Rodgers himself, or the rest of the guys in the roster. Once football started, I do think that there was a sense of normalcy that was restored. And that's why I really think the last week and a half have been so important for the team. You're coming off of that really bad loss against the Saints. You get blown out of the building in a neutral site game against a team that's gone through hell over the last few weeks in the Saints. And coming off of that, I thought it was important how they looked to start the game against the Lions. They didn't look very good, right?
No.
And so, you know, they fall behind 17-14 to a rebuilding team on Monday night at home. And now you wonder how they're going to come out of the locker room. And they put together 30 minutes of really good football. it's going to be really interesting, Colin, based on all that water that's gone under the bridge that I just took you through, how now they build off of that. Like, because they have 30 minutes of good football on the books right now for the 2021 season. Are they able to take that to the next level? And, I, Aaron kind of airing his grievances out there. I do wonder, I'm with you on that, how that goes over in the building after they finally got the sort of titanic turn there in the second half of that game.
Yeah. So, you know, Justin Fields, Chicago yesterday, Mark Sanchez talked about this. And who else talked about this on our show about Chicago, the different market? Yeah, it was Sanchez. He talked about, you know, it's different in Kansas City with Mahomes not playing. It's mostly a friendly media. You go to Chicago and, you know, Matt Nagy, even though he got Trubisky to the playoffs twice, you know, this is a big city. It's a loud city. It's the third biggest city in the country. And the media is sophisticated. They're aggressive. And they want to see Justin Fields. There are a lot of people, I've heard this narrative, I don't know if it's true or not, that you start Dalton because Nagy wants to save his job and Ryan Pace wants to save his job. And now here we are with Justin Fields. What would, in your opinion, your sourcing, which is excellent, what would Chicago have to do for the GM and the coach to return next year? Or do you think at this point, it doesn't matter that Justin Fields is going to have a new set of bros next year, GM, coach?
I don't think there's a foregone conclusion. I mean, the Bears are actually top 10 in wins over the last 3 years, which is amazing to think, you know, when we talk about them the way we talk about them. They made the playoffs two of the last 3 years. The problem is the trajectory that they're on. 12-4, 8-8, and you make the playoffs in an 8-8 year, right? So what's the best thing to do, Colin, to create positive momentum? Well, it's to have a young quarterback playing really well. So I think, you know, a piece of this is going to be how the team does, yes. I think another piece of this is going to be where the quarterback's going coming out of this year. And if you make the playoffs and Justin Fields develops in the background after starting a game or two here, then that's one way to do it. The other way to do it, what if Justin Fields is dynamite over the next couple of weeks? The biggest reason why Matt Nagy decided to go forward with the plan that he went forward with, he believed he had a contending team that could win on its running game and its defense in 2021, which would afford him the luxury to sit the rookie quarterback. Now, he kind of gets this organic window to look at what Justin Fields looks like inside of that structure, right? So you think Andy Dalton's the perfect bus driver. Well, can Justin Fields bring you something in that role that Andy Dalton can't? For the next couple of weeks, he's going to get a window into that. And if they do decide to go with Justin Fields, that brings you to the other way that I think Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace can save their jobs, which is, if you've got a young player who's ascending and it looks like the team's ascending with him at the end of the year, sometimes ownership will look at that and say to themselves, we can't pull the plug on this. That's not the right thing for Justin Fields. So I think it's one of two ways. Either you can't contend with Andy Dalton like you thought you would, or you get to November and December and, man, it looks like they're doing a good job developing Justin Fields, and we do not want to pull the plug on that.
Good stuff. Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback. Check out his stuff. We always do. Yeah, you do. You probably. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 41, so you're off by 19 years. Thank you, though. I appreciate the compliment there.
Good seeing you, my man.
All right, thanks, Colin.
Interesting Urban Meyer thought with USC. Interesting. I'll talk about that next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Great to have you in today. So as I've told you, I do not think Urban Meyer is going to leave Jacksonville. It would be too weird after 1 year. I think he's making a commitment to Trevor Lawrence and the ownership group. And USC, you know, has other candidates. I think there's some really interesting NFL and college candidates. I'll get to that in a second. Yesterday, I make a call every day on the USC job. I live here. It's my local team I follow closely. I go to practices. I know a lot of people in the building. I try not to be a fan. That's not my job. But I have a lot of friends who are connected to the university. And it's been a rough several years. And I do not think Urban Meyer is going to take the USC job. But I will say this, and let me personalize this for a second. People, when I left ESPN and came to Fox, were like, whoa, that's a big risk. I was like, no, it's not. It was an easy call. Fox News worked. Fox Business worked. Fox Sports was successful. I knew they'd figure out FS1. This company has, the Murdochs have a history of what they do works. This was an easy one. This wasn't a company that, like, some stuff works, like everything. It you know, the company has a history. You watch Fox Sports. You watch the Super Bowls. You watch the NFL. You watch the World Series. They hire good people. They get out of their way. It was an easy move to come here. Been a hard move to go to Vice or something I didn't know anything about. It was easy to come here. There's no risk in me coming here. And it's always easier for any of you listening, you know, when Nick Saban took the Alabama job. Well, Alabama's one with like seven different coaches. That's not a hard one to go to. Michigan State, you don't know what you're getting, but Alabama's a top five brand of all time, even before Nick Saban got there. So Urban Meyer said to Vic Fangio this week, the coach of Denver, hey, NFL's rough. It's like playing Alabama every week. No, it's not. Alabama would get beat 70-0 by Jacksonville. It's much tougher than that. And I do not think he takes the USC job. But it is interesting that Urban Meyer would not have to wait to succeed here. Say, Urban Meyer took over 6-7 Ohio State and went undefeated the following year. In the Big Ten, which is significantly better this morning than the Pac-12. This is the weakest the Pac-12's ever been. This is the third straight year. It's garbage. Outside of kind of Oregon. It's just garbage. Okay, so think about this. Clay Helton is probably the worst USC football coach in 25 years. Nice man, but it didn't work. He inherited kind of a mess. He's not a great coach. He got to 5 bowls, has a winning record, and before he was fired had won 4 straight road games. And he was a disaster. Urban Meyer next to Saban's the greatest college football coach ever. He turned around Bowling Green 1 year, Utah 1 year. Those are not top programs. If you go look at USC's schedule next year, the best team in the conference, Oregon, they don't play them. Their out-of-conference is Rice, Fresno State at home. Their toughest game is also at home, Notre Dame. And they probably wouldn't win that game. But they would walk Urban Meyer's the second-best coach. Look what he did at Ohio State. That's in the Big Ten when you got to play Wisconsin and Penn State. Those are real programs. I mean, Indiana's now, Iowa. This is the best Iowa team I've seen. Iowa's always a bowl team. Indiana can now play. Big Ten's a million miles better than the Pac-12. So do I think Urban's going there? No. But it's much easier, and take it from somebody who's, I've moved across country 4 times. It is much easier to move when you know you're going to have instant guaranteed success. You're not taking a pay cut. You're staying in great weather. The conference never been weaker. I can tell you Urban Meyer was absolutely interested in the job 2 years ago. How do I know? I talked to him in my office. My not very palatial office. I do not think he's leaving. I do not. And there's going to be really good candidates. By the way, I'd like to say this again. I said this yesterday. College football fans are all the same. My whole life. Our coach is loyal. Our coach would never leave. Our coach would... It's Los Angeles. 95% of great college football programs are in the sticks. You know who makes the decision? The wife. Lots of wives would love to live on the beach in Southern California with their adorable kids. I have been told that 2 of the candidates, I'm not telling you who, but they're great candidates, have already been given a thumbs up from their wives. Oh, yeah, I'll go. I know small town has an allure to many of you. Not to young, beautiful wives. They like L.A. They're not afraid of it. They're not afraid of the taxes. They like the sun and the Mediterranean climate, the things to do. So I don't think Urban's going, but, you know, I said, I don't think it's happening. But if you don't think USC, if they get the right coach, turn it around in first year. If you get the right coach, you'll win tomorrow. They got a roster with more 4- and 5-star guys than anybody in Pac-12. Every time USC's gotten the right coach, Pete Carroll, John Robinson, boom, overnight, bang, dominate the conference. Don't. If you think this brand's going to die, you're out of your mind. Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, USC, those brands don't die. They just dip. There are brands that die. Kansas State lost Bill Snyder. Bye-bye. Nebraska lost Tom Osborne. See you later. Bama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, USC. They dip. They don't die. Greg Cosell, Hour 2 next.